Today on Jay Sekulow Live, welcome back to Fear City as the NYPD has $1 billion cut from its budget.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The New York City Council approving $1 billion in cuts from the police budget, transferring the funds to youth and social service programs.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
All of this despite a rise in violent crime across New York City.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
$837 million in cuts and transfers to the NYPD at a time when murder is on the rise. Homicide is on the rise. I mean, you got serious, violent crime, gun crime specifically. The amount of people who have been injured in serious criminal activities. We've all watched as New York City burned, and we saw those riots, and you saw the police come in and try to control and not clear nothing. Nothing clear from Bill de Blasio and the mayor of New York City about what to do, how to engage, and how to kind of calm things down. And then is basically the city got looted, and the streets are empty, and we're now used to seeing on TV as the cable news cameras pull away Times Square with no cars in it. I mean, it is a unique time, but it has happened before in New York's history. It happened in the 1970s when New York was cratering on the brink of bankruptcy. They cut funding to the police for different reasons, but then faced a massive crime wave that lasted about a decade.
So, and see, interesting, at the same time that they're talking about cutting police budgets in New York, the Seattle in police department has now gone into the autonomous zone. Why did they go in? The mayor had to issue an executive order. And this was what's interesting here. What are they calling this? I guess the CHOP zone. The crime rate within the zone was on the increase. So what we're doing is, here's the problem. If you have surgery, you have a surgeon who uses a scalpel. If you're going to get a pair of, if you're going to go get some meat cut, you use a butcher. A butcher uses a big butcher knife, bludgeoning blow of the butcher's knife to carve the meat. The surgeon uses a scalpel. In dealing with the situation with the police, to carve out those bad actors, you need a scalpel, not a bludgeoning blow, because it's going to end up hurting the community more significantly. And by the way, we have been very critical of the police abuse that we have seen on national TV and that we know about in cases. There's no excuse for this. Those are, my view, a lot of those cases are murder cases. And certainly Mr. Floyd's was a murder case. And certainly in Atlanta, I believe that was a murder case. So people can argue some technicalities on that one maybe. But still, it was aggravated homicide if it's not murder one. I mean, these were felony crimes. Murder. Homicide. But you do not eliminate the police department. You need the surgeon scalpel to go in and fix this. And to spend the money, instead of taking $1 billion out of the budget to move to other things, why don't they take that $1 billion and use it for training?
Yeah, we're talking about NYPD. We're talking about the Capitol. It's not necessarily that New York City values are the values of the majority of the country, but as we've talked about throughout this pandemic, that without New York, without the LAs functioning, without these major hubs of our business, whether it's from the business that comes in from the Europe, business international, whether it's the stock market, whether it is just the fact, it's kind of so goes the rest of the country. I mean, these are the capitals of it. We got used to, we took a New York City from the 70s and 80s, and it became one of the safest places to actually be, because there was in a sense a not a militarization of police, but because of terrorism, a next kind of level of policing.
Yeah, well, aggressive counterintelligence, and that resulted in safety on multiple levels. When we come back, I want to talk to the fan about what it's like in Washington right now. But also, don't forget, we're in our matching challenge campaign, day one of the July matching challenge campaign.
Yeah, support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. You can double the impact of your donation at aclj.org. And this is a great time to support our work, the American Center for Law and Justice. Remember, even this broadcast, we're able to do this broadcast every day and be talking to all of you right now. And throughout this pandemic, throughout all the crises, because of your support for the American Center for Law and Justice.
I'm holding in my hands a printed copy of our quarterly, this is just for the quarter, FOIA litigation report. You support the ACLJ, the work gets done at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls on this too, because it's coming to a city near you. You know, you may live in the suburbs, but you're likely surrounding a metropolitan area. Now, it could be
especially our radio audience.
We're in every major city, so even if you're getting that signal in the suburbs, you're getting that signal because you're near that major city. You might listen, unless you're in what is actual rural, and that means you've got so much space between you and your neighbor. You're a suburb of a city. So all of these cuts, it may not be to your town's police department, but of course it affects you. It affects, you know, whether it's your wife or your husband who has to go downtown each day, or you know, where you go to do business. And this affects everybody. So I want to go to Thad Bennett, Washington, D.C., and I want to get your calls too, because people are experiencing this. But I think, you know, sometimes you see these cities like New York, they've kind of hopped ahead of where Minneapolis is. Minneapolis wanting to kind of defund the entire police department. Than, what is it like in Washington, D.C.? Now, D.C. has a lot of policing, but we still saw how quickly these protesters could overrun that when the police were kind of caught off guard.
Yeah, it's a little bit different in Washington, D.C., Jordan. There's no doubt that Mayor Bowser and the city council are getting the same pressure that New York is. And if there weren't an issue of joint jurisdiction in some of these issues, I actually think they would be moving pretty quickly in line with what New York is doing. Now, there's a couple of things. Congress does have some jurisdiction over the district. And maybe more importantly, Jordan, as you know, the president has the ability to protect some of the federal property, and he has done so. He's used federal personnel to protect some of the statues, some of the monuments that were in question here. So I think Mayor Bowser's authority, the D.C.'s city council's authority has been checked by that. But Jordan, I would just go back to the conversation you had with your dad about this is coming to a city near you. I think if you look at Washington, D.C., and you take the federal layer out of that, Jordan, I think you would see the same cuts passing in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yeah, so you're starting to see the cities that have honestly been through. You know, yeah. D.C. was the murder capital of the United States. That's shifted. It's no longer Washington, D.C. These places got safer and safer. Some of that was the post-9/11 buildup, but even before the 9/11 attacks, there was a redoubling of police efforts after the crack epidemic that hit the urban areas around our country. That caused a lot of what happened in the 70s and 80s, including in New York, violent crime to spike. But we're seeing now another time period where people have nowhere to go, no job to go to, no employment. They cannot flee the city. They can't leave. They have nowhere to go. It was already a very expensive place to live. Very, you know, you're spending everything you make to live there. So where do they go? Well, they hit the streets. We all knew that was already happening. The question now is the long-term implications of this as it will take. We already knew. I mean, we already saw New York and knew that this was going to take significant time to get back to what was normal.
Yeah.
And
I lived through one of the – look, I lived through New York City in the 70s when you couldn't really go up there or work. I worked in New York City for a law firm in the 80s. And, you know, I'm going to tell you something. It was – now, when Mayor Giuliani came on, things changed very quickly because of the way they changed their surveillance and policing techniques. But in the 1970s, are you going to show this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can put it up on the screen for everybody, too. I mean, so this was 1975. So for most of you listening to this broadcast right now, this is not like that long ago. It's something you lived through. But we didn't have social media then. So you almost have to remind people what was going on. This was not like an interest group that put this out. NYPD put this out as what people who live called? In New York, it's called Welcome to Fear City, for those of you who are watching, for those of you listening. And it was basically a 10-point plan on, or got 9 guidelines. And it starts with stay off the streets after 6 p.m. When have we heard those kind of things? We've heard it the last few weeks. Don't walk. Take a cab. You know, the taxi cab and that whole idea of, because it's basically one of the only cities in the country where there was still kind of your hotel would handle your taxi cab if you needed a cab before you went on the street. That was a holdover from what happened during this time period where it said, do not walk. Now think about that in New York in 2020. I mean, we're in 2020, and you think about the fact that, you know, we all took that for granted for a long time in New York that you could walk for as long as you wanted to, basically. It wasn't that there were not areas in New York that were more dangerous than others. We're talking about Manhattan. You know, we're talking about Manhattan right now.
I just sent to Will Haynes, it'll take us a few minutes to get this up, a picture that a good friend of ours, a very good lawyer, sent us, who we work with. And it's a picture of the federal courthouse, or the surrogates courthouse, New York State Courthouse. Yeah. That was built in 1970, a beautiful building, and you'll see what's been done to it. And, of course, the response is the mayor says we're going to take $1 billion out of the police budget, and we're going to move it to other things, maybe try to help to do something with security in the school. And security in the schools will no longer be handled by the police. They're going to have school resource officers that I guess are Department of Education employees. Meanwhile, the Department of Education in New York is talking about a 3% cut in their budget.
And are they even going back to school? We don't even.
Well, who knows?
I mean, that's another question. Like, what are they spending the money on?
But I did
who are
have,
they protecting?
So as we get this picture ready, which kind of I think paints you the nature of the anarchy here. And I protect and defend freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, protests, marches, parades, placard holding. I don't support. We condemn violence, destruction of property, defecation of property. Those are things that should not happen. Fan, you've had what is it like? I mean, our office is in the epicenter. I mean, we are next to the Supreme Court, a block from the Capitol, surrounded by the Senate and House office buildings. What's it like when you go in the morning?
Yeah, it's been interesting, Jay, because the businesses that I pass along the way are boarded up still. I mean, a lot of them are. It's something that is interesting to see because even the House and the Senate don't have staffers in them for the most part. Most of them are still working remotely, and yet the businesses that have tried to open have to board up. And Jay, you alluded to this underlying issue, and I think this is what makes it a double tragedy. We've said on this broadcast many times there's an underlying issue that needs to be addressed here. But this defunding effort that we're seeing, Jay, of course, it complicates the problem because it doesn't do anything to address that underlying issue. And it actually makes the people who are supposedly being protested for even more vulnerable, because then when they get in a position to need help, they cannot reach anyone. And I will tell you, most of the action in Washington, D.C. is down Pennsylvania Avenue from here, closer to the White House.
Yep.
But driving into Washington, D.C., Jay, you see evidence of this even today.
Are people using mass transit?
Not the demonstrators are.
Okay.
Most businesses in Washington, D.C. still are not permitting public transportation for their workers.
Okay.
I mean, I've lived in Miami, Washington, D.C. You know, I've been in, like, a lot of these places that have been in the news lately, and where people are on top, you got a lot of people, always edgy. Okay, always edgy. Washington, D.C., always on the edge of a protest. People, you know, like, that's kind of part of D.C., but there's so many police everywhere, Miami and Washington. But you've had now months and months of this drain on economies And even in Washington, like Than said, empty build. These are Supreme Court's empty. The, you know, we're talking about what surrounds the office. Usually those were always, it didn't matter if it was, there were always people working there 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And if they were, they were working till 10 o'clock at night, and then you had people coming in at night so that it's ready to start again at 6 a.m. I mean, this was the kind of hours that people used to keep in these cities. They were 24-hour cities, like Miami, like New York, like Washington, D.C., like L.A. They never stopped.
Let me put this picture up of
now there's, they've been stopped
of the circuit court in New York. There it is for our Facebook viewers and TV viewers. There it is. The graffiti all over the place. I'll describe it for a radio audience. A building built in 1907, a Beaux Arts building, a very famous building in Manhattan, and it's covered in graffiti on the at least the levels where people can reach. And now, can you take graffiti off? Ultimately, you can. You got to sandblast it off. That's resources too, but that's destruction. That's not helping anybody's cause. Now let me tell you something. I want to be clear on this. What has spurred the protests is a legitimate issue. A very legitimate issue. The police brutality, and I don't even think that's the right word, the illegal action by some police officers, not a majority of police officers, not most police officers, but some, have put the woke the conscience of the country up. We saw that what happened to George Floyd, and you have to react. And the reactions were in the street. And the protests initially started off peacefully, then they got violent, then the protesters, to their credit, with the police, got control of it, and now it's peaceful protest. And they, people have the right to do that. I would defend the right to protest. I think cutting budgets of the police department is what I said earlier. You need the skill of a surgeon, not the bludgeoning blow of a butcher, to handle this. You don't eliminate police departments. They had the autonomous zone in Washington State, and they had to close it. The police had to come back in. Why? Because it was dangerous. 911 has to be answered. So what we have to do is swift justice, fair justice, due process to everybody, of course, but make sure that the bad apples that are in the police departments are removed, but reinforce the police, don't eliminate it.
And you have to, this billion-dollar cut, this is not like the liberals aren't celebrating this. The people in the streets,
no.
The Antifa activists, the defund the police, they want defunded police. They want you to rename it, reassociate, you know, go back through an entire new process. And I think it's a very, it's a potentially dangerous time because of the impact this can have on the entire country. We'll take your calls. We come back, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 is the city you live in. Next, the next Fear City. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
So in New York specifically, there's been an increase, 528 shooting incidents, 636 shooting victims this year. That's through June 30th. This translates, that's a 46% increase in incidents and a 53% increase in victims compared to the same time last year. So we're talking about that basically, you know, 4 or 5 months into 2019 versus 4 or 5 months into 2020, you're talking about a 46% jump in the amount of shooting incidents. And that's not all crime. That's when a gun was fired. 53% increase in the amount of people who were injured by that gun. Some died, some are still in the hospital, some may have survived. But think about a 46% increase in your city of how many times someone illegally fired a gun. That's double. So double the crime wherever you are. It doesn't matter if you're in the safest city in the country, that is going to have an impact on you when you double anything, because that means it's double those horrific stories you see on your local news. Double the amount of the violence. Double the amount of the, if you're using a gun for a criminal activity, those are a lot of those are also other violent crimes that were also occurring. Whether it is robbery, whether it is assault, whether you're caught up in a war between two different criminal elements. Drug cartels, again, carrying out kind of shocking attacks. These kind of taking advantage of the crisis, trying to take advantage of the pandemic, the streets being empty. Yeah. And now they're going to see this. If you were one of those criminal entities, the ones that were running the looting, we now all know that was highly coordinated by criminal organized crime. You're going to see, hey, the police are getting cut too. This is our time to
The New York City Council, this was not unanimous. There was a New York City councilman that said, now what we've done is create a more violent city for our citizens to live in. And I think, I think nationwide, this is the problem. This is where no one's thinking through the consequences of the actions. How do you respond to something? It's called with reason and rational approaches. Don't just paint broad brushstrokes thinking you're going to solve a problem. It does not work.
Jay, I think it's political pandering. I really do. I think it's worse than not thinking through the consequences. And part of the reason I think that is, you know, I look at this through sort of the federal lens, and maybe the one silver lining here is at least people can choose to live in cities and localities that haven't made this type of decision. But this is the type of decision that I think in this moment in Washington, D.C., you would see come out of Washington, D.C. if they had the authority to do it. Because think just back a couple of weeks ago to the debate over the Justice Act. The Washington, D.C. Democrats had spent months and months talking about how they needed more resources to pour into law enforcement for things like body cameras. Then when they had the opportunity to go down to the Senate floor and vote on that very thing, more dollars for body cameras, more dollars for law enforcement, they not only voted no, but then they ran back to their localities and supported efforts like the one that is happening in Chuck Schumer's state in New York. So, Jay, I really do think it's more than just not thinking through the consequences. I think it's looking at the consequences and instead choosing what they think is a political advantage for their base. That's very dangerous, Jay. But I will say, this is why we do think these decisions need to be made closer to the people, because if they came out of Washington, D.C., it would be nationwide.
This is also why we bring this broadcast to you each and every day, both on radio and TV and on social media platforms, because it's a way for us to get information out. Your support, by the way, of the American Center for Law and Justice doesn't only just go to this, which is pretty extensive. I'm holding up a 2-inch thick report on just our FOIA litigation. So it's not just for this. It's for this broadcast that you're seeing right now, broadcast to you around the country, around the globe, actually. So your support of the ACLJ makes that kind of difference. And we're in a matching challenge campaign right now. And we're not decreasing our media presence at this time. We are increasing it. Logan's launched a program called the Logan Sekulow Reprogram. You saw a little bit of it yesterday when he was on with us. You could check their podcast out and their broadcast out on Facebook and all kinds of social media platforms. We've got this broadcast. Jordan's doing shorts. Of video shorts. Our video teams are putting together video during these broadcasts. We're putting video up on our social media platforms, which combine about 8 million, or maybe a little bit more than that now, with all of our social media platforms, probably 8 million, 200,000 or 300,000 more than that. So your support of the ACLJ allows this platform to continue, and we want to encourage you to do that at ACLJ.org, especially when we're in a matching challenge month, which means any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we're getting a matching gift for, and we encourage you to do that. Let's take a phone call.
Yeah, Yvonne's calling from Oregon Online, too. Yvonne, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Yvonne.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say it's a carbon copy of New York and all these places that are having so much destruction. Every day, I can't remember, there hasn't been a morning I woke up, they weren't talking about the destruction downtown and the attacks on police. Yet the city council tells the police they're not to use tear gas to disperse crowds unless it's absolutely necessary. Well, I guess last night is what they considered absolutely necessary, which it was. And they were throwing fireworks, rocks the size of baseballs, and they had some kind of orange smoke, so the police did have to use tear gas on them. But the thing is that every day there's destruction of businesses. It's graffiti all downtown. Nobody's doing anything, but the city council doesn't want the police to use tear gas or bother them.
Yeah.
But there's at one point, a few days ago, they locked people in the Justice Center and set fires. That, I'm sure not everybody, I mean, people here knew what happened. But, I mean, this is what's going on in Portland. Locking people in a building and setting a fire. Last night, it was the police union that they were throwing the bottles and fireworks at police.
Now, Yvonne, Portland was a city. I've been there a lot. My wife's family in Portland. So I've spent a lot of time there, and especially over the last 10 years. And in those last 10 years, it was a boomtown. I mean, it was a boomtown. It was every time I'd go back, there was another neighborhood that had been kind of redone, and there were new restaurants. And whether those people building those restaurants liked the politics of why they had a boomtown going on didn't really matter. But they don't have their jobs either. I mean, I think that there's that combination of no work for that group that came to Portland, also kind of came back into Portland. And now, I mean, this is what you see in these cities,
yeah,
these boomtown type cities that totally transformed in the last 10 to 20 years. So they have been on these trajectories, which is up, 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 a lot of young people in the service industry and had good paying jobs that were consistently, I mean, you know, those were cities that just kept being, they were pricing people out. You couldn't even like move to Portland anymore.
You know, I've done a little bit of traveling by car, obviously, over the last 6 weeks. You've seen me in different locations. And what concerns me still, besides the protests, and the protests are fine, it's the violence that I said I'm condemned, and that seems to be much more under control. I think clearing out these autonomous zones were an overreaction and kind of ridiculous, to be quite blunt. Having said that, let me say what I'm concerned about economically. Look, I mean, the country's hurting. And while I think the economy is going to come back, I was talking to people in North Carolina and in Florida and in Alabama and in Georgia and in Tennessee, and small businesses are struggling. Medium-sized businesses are struggling. Large businesses are struggling. So what we need to be is working on solutions, which is what our policy team does at the ACLJ, what Than's team does in Washington, D.C. Work on solutions, not just in court. We talked about those victories yesterday, but then you immediately move to another topic. That's the way it is. We're going to continue to do that at the ACLJ. Your support of our work is that critical, especially in our matching challenge months.
Folks, you can support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And for our next half hour, do you think your city's next? The big city near wherever you live, is it next? Is it the next fierce city?
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. Take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. This is Joe Borelli, New York City Council. I don't know his politics. This is what he said, though, to Fox News about these cuts to the police. At a time when people say, I want to expect more from my police department, I expect better training.
Well, I met Joe Borelli, actually, I think.
You don't get better training and better support with billion-dollar budget cuts.
Can I say something just really quickly, Jordan? Let you go back to it, and we'll play Joe Borelli. I have lived in New York. Pam and I have lived in New York. You have been in New York. I have worked in New York City. Let me tell you, I remember what it was like when you couldn't walk down Fifth Avenue, when you could not walk down Broadway, where you had it when you were kids. You couldn't even go. You know, now you go there and it's Disney and it's all these other things. Yeah. Then it was horrible. I'll just leave it at that.
No, they've been showing it on TV, what it was like before.
Yeah, and that's recently, what it's going to be again. Yeah. So anyways, but Joe Borelli.
Yeah, let's listen to Joe Borelli by five.
Today, we know what we're doing, and we know that what we're doing will create a more violent city, and yet we're doing it anyway. We're making these cuts to appease a fraction of far-left New Yorkers, and I understand the politics of that. But we're also making these cuts to continue this false propagation that police officers are the gravest danger to the public.
Let me go to Jerry in Rhode Island online. Well, he's been holding on, so I want to get to his call. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hello, team. I wish the commentary being caught in that studio was going on in the House or the Senate, because the sage wisdom of Jay, who remembers.
I did that for three weeks, Jerry. I think that was my stint on that. Go ahead.
Well, I think you're talking about the time pre-Giuliani, before those 600 plainclothes guys were able to get 80. If that Bernie guy, that's all right, to get 80% of the guns off the street because plainclothes guys quelled it, and they just disbanded that. Those who don't learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it.
Isn't it interesting, in a place where it's the most difficult to get to legally access a firearm, the most illegal uses of firearms are occurring. Now, that wasn't necessarily the case during this time that we got used to. But the norm for New York was not that this last 20 years. The norm was what happened before. It was a tougher city, a tougher place. Times Square was not a place you took kids. It was not a photo op. It was wild. Midtown Manhattan was one of the more dangerous places in the entire world, where there was, as it says in the Welcome to Fear City guide, as a reminder to everybody about what it was like then, and media was different. You didn't have, could you imagine if you had 24-hour news coverage during those times? Huh. And do you think the police always looked great at what they were doing either? In their crowd, I mean, those are pretty violent times, almost street battles, street warfare. But when you go back to these guys, you see things like,
come back from the break.
You see, don't go on public transportation, don't walk, stay off the streets after 6 o'clock, even in the summer when it's still light outside. You'll note it says in here, don't be misled by the late sunsets during the summer season. If you walk in Midtown at about 7:30, you'll observe that the streets are nearly deserted. And there's a reason why that other people that live there.
New York was also a disaster at the time.
The city was near bankruptcy. Yeah.
When we come back from the break, I am going to relay a situation that I experienced. You were a baby in a stroller with Pam in New York City. Saw the police in action. This would have been 83, maybe 82, 83. And let's not condemn the entire police department. Let me just say that. Get rid of the ones that are causing the problem. Prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law and do it aggressively. Give them due process, but prosecute. But my goodness, don't get rid of the police. I've seen it. You've seen it. We've all seen it. This is a non-appropriate response. It's not appropriate to label entire police departments like this. Remove the problems. Use the surgeon's scalpel, not the butcher's knife. There's a big difference of how you approach things when you're looking at how you carve problems out. And that's what I'm saying here.
All right, folks, support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. If you want to talk to us on the air, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Get back to it. We'll get another update from Stan on what's happening on the floor of the U.S. Senate. What are the Democrats up to right now? Go to aclj.org. Support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. We'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
I'm going to read some more because it's so applicable to the time period we're living in now. Now, whether this is a blip in history, and yes, the movement from George Floyd has impacts, but the other protest movement that we saw that has become this kind of violent, and these, as Than talked about, boarded up streets, boarded up cities, graffiti everywhere, violence, toppling things without the permit to do so, without the vote actually happening, things like that, violent crime on the rise. That part could be a blip. I don't think the George Floyd part would be a blip. There's too many major entities inside the United States. I don't think that's going to be totally forgotten because of this, but I will tell you. I mean, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, they could not remember his name. Chuck Schumer couldn't remember George Floyd's name in the last couple weeks because their focus is no longer on George Floyd and the incident there specifically. Their focus is now on how can I use this moment to change society. That's very dangerous. It has never worked out for them. The fact that New York City had Republican mayors, the fact that New York had Republican governors, it's kind of hard for people to believe during this time period of peace we've gotten used to. But listen to the first two paragraphs. Stay off the streets after 6 p.m. Even in Midtown Manhattan, muggings and occasional murders are on the increase during the early evening hours. Do not be misled by the late sunsets during the summer season. If you walk in Midtown at about 7:30 p.m., you will observe that the streets are nearly deserted. Looks like that right now.
Yep.
Nearly deserted. 2, do not walk. If you must leave your hotel after 6 p.m., try not to go out alone. Summon a radio taxi by telephone or ask the hotel doorman to call a taxi while you remain in the lobby. Follow the same procedure when leaving the restaurant, theater, or other location of your evening activity. Let me remind you what it looked like in New York before everyone basically left Midtown Manhattan. There were doormen protecting the buildings from being overrun. Now, they couldn't protect the glass from being shattered until they got the next day when they put up all of the, basically boarded it up. But then, you're saying Washington, D.C., the left, they're just moving all along, la-di-da-da. They got no staff. They got no one there. They're talking more about masks than they are the fact that our civil society is breaking down.
Well, Jordan, I actually think they're walking away from the constituency that they've said they want to help as well. I agree with you that the issue of justice for George Floyd is not going away, but I will tell you this, this movement we're seeing right now to defund the police, Jordan, it's delaying justice for George Floyd. It definitely is, because what we saw in the United States Senate over the last couple of weeks was a piece of legislation that was named after George Floyd, that Democrats have been calling for, to send more resources to these communities to enact some of the reforms, including body cameras for police officers, that George Floyd's family had been looking for. Jordan, Senate Democrats stood in the way of it. And here's what I will say on this. You and your dad had a conversation about this. I don't think anybody, not even a Senate Democrat, thinks that you get safer communities with cuts to law enforcement. I don't think they believe that. I think they know they get exactly the opposite. But Jordan, you know this better than I do. When it comes to an election year, sometimes the pandering to a radical fringe of the base happens. That's what this is, Jordan. Mark my words. They don't think they get safer communities.
Saying that President Trump was going to a white supremacist event. This is literally, I mean, we're talking about, is Abraham Lincoln now Teddy Roosevelt, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson?
Grant.
That's going to, no, just the four.
Oh.
Because he was going to South Dakota. He was attending a white, yes. Oh, okay. He was attending a white supremacist event. Now, they deleted it, but they left it up long enough so... Who do you think is writing the messaging at the DNC right now? People who agree with the people who are burning your city down. That's the same people.
Let me give you a personal story, too. This is something that Pam and I experienced. We're on the streets of Manhattan. It's in the afternoon. It's, I think, 1983. There's a statute that's called the Love Statute. It spells L-O-V-E. It's right by some big banks. I think right off of Fifth Avenue, good part of town. All of a sudden, bells go off. Broad daylight, bank robbery. You're in a stroller. The police are screaming and telling everybody to duck. Those police ran into guys wielding weapons to protect me and you and your mother and the rest of the people that were on the streets. And they got that guy and they wrestled him to the ground. And is it violent when they wrestled them to the ground? Yeah, I mean, they didn't do chokeholds. But let me tell you what they were not going to do. They weren't going to let that guy execute a gun. Now, that's markedly different than what took place to Mr. Floyd. Because there was no excuse to what happened there. That was murder also. But what this guy was trying to do in New York City, wielding a gun in the middle of broad daylight, was also an attempt at murder. Now, here's the problem. So let's cut the police. So they just don't happen to be on that street at that time.
So about a year ago, we were in Miami. So this is now fast forward to 2019. So we're in Miami, place that it's the city we used to live in, and I'm not going to name it. Or the hotel, because it wasn't that big of a deal. The police handled it quickly, but there were two undercover. This is the big difference too. Cutting these undercover police out, cutting
so dangerous.
The next level of policing out. Because that's who's mostly carrying out the arrest in broad daylight in those situations. So they're tracking someone. He pulls out a gun. They pull out there. Boom, done. I mean, it was over in seconds. Seconds. But it was a takedown. Police takedown in 2019. Was it extremely violent? So loud? Were they screaming so loud that everyone could hear because there were guns involved?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they want to make sure you look and you duck. And you move, and the hotel people come out and get you in, just like it said.
They were screaming expletives, the cops, for good reason.
It's not like because the New York crime rate goes down 40%, there's no violent crime in New York. It's still a huge city. There's a lot of violent crime. We're talking about specific to Midtown Manhattan right now, which is a little different. Usually there was not that kind of violent crime there. That's what it was about in 1970, 1980. And so it's not like we're ever going to have no crime. We're never going to have So that's why you need police, though. It takes that and it makes it livable. It makes it where you can go about your day, do the business you want to do. They're handling that. It's not your concern. The biggest issue in our country, we don't want vigilante justice. You don't want that. You don't want communities deciding on their own
standards, yeah, no practices. No, you want accountable police departments that can respond. And if there is an abuse, which there have been, and we know that, those need to be, and they have been, dealt with swiftly. But you also need to read the first, another one of the paragraphs from the Welcome to Fear City matter that was distributed in New York. Because this shows you that you could take what was a 1975, fast forward it 45 years, I guess, and see what you get.
Yeah, I mean, so we just listen. This is the beginning of the survival guides, the third sentence in, second paragraph. By the way, the numbers were also similarly up. Robberies were up 21%, aggravated assault was up 15%, larceny up 22%, burglary up 19%. Now, to quote, solve his budget problems, Mayor Beam is going to discharge substantial numbers of firefighters and law enforcement officers of all kinds. By the time you read this, the number of public safety personnel available to protect residents and visitors may already have been still further reduced. Under those circumstances, the best advice we can give you is this. Until things change, stay away from New York City if you possibly can. To me, I look at Governor Cuomo and I shrug because he's like, oh, you can't come here. So what? Who is going to go to New York State to open a business with that kind of leadership? And
go to New York City
and
to visit?
And who's going to New York City to visit? No one.
Yes, but they made a big deal about we're not letting people in from Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and Florida.
They weren't coming there in the last 3 months, four months.
You should
months
hope
anyway.
They were people would be wanting to come back.
Well, we thought that was going to be we thought maybe that was the case. Obviously, it's not. Things didn't work out the same way. So we're having to deal. Every state, cities have to deal with the new
with the COVID. I mean,
which is how these protest movements started the first time.
This is all. I mean, if you look at it from a socioeconomic perspective here, if you kind of look at it in that barrel, in that lens, what you see is you had the perfect storm. You had a pandemic that was affecting everybody's health, or potentially could affect everybody's health. You had high unemployment as a result of the shutdown of the economy. You had people stuck at home with nothing to do for months, which resulted also in civil unrest. You had the horrible abuses that took place to George Floyd and others, broadcast across the stream, across all kinds of platforms. It was the perfect storm. So now we have to figure as a society, as a civil society, how do we regain our footing? And we regain our footing by putting forward policies that make sense, which is what we do at the ACLJ, working with legislators, House and Senate, but local legislators too, to put forward rational policies, to publish papers that make sense. We saw yesterday, a Law Review article from 2005 ends up in a Supreme Court opinion. Position papers we write end up becoming policy. That is an important part of what we do in Washington. Than?
And there are things that can make a real difference, Jay. I mean, you talked about the law enforcement component. The Justice Act would help that. You talked about the education opportunity component. We've got a proposal out that would help that. Of course, there's an economic component as well. But, Jay, all of the things that are happening in right now are distracting from those things. Jay, those efforts that you're talking about, those would actually do something real on the ground to help address the situation. Our focus ought to be there.
I think the danger is this. There will be no police reform at the federal level. There will be no change. The law will stay the same. There'll still be everything you didn't want. By the way, chokeholds aren't banned. They're not banned right now because Democrats wouldn't support this. We'll be back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're going to go right to the phones. If you want to get one in, you got to call now, 1-800-684-3110 in our final segment. Let's go to Michael in Texas online, too. Michael, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question. I wanted to get your opinion on some things. I saw recently that roughly 2,500 inmates got released from Rikers, and it looks like 1 in 10 of those released contributed towards committing 450 new crimes. And so, with the call to defund police and the simultaneous release of prisoners due to COVID, is there any sort of accountability for the average citizen who's facing this crime? You know, we don't want vigilante justice, but how can we hold these judges and DAs accountable for the release and the rise in crime?
Yeah, look, you raise a really important question, and I just asked our producer if those statistics are correct, and apparently they are correct. Now, look, most of the people that have been released from prisons were nonviolent offenders, and they have not, so they did not pose a risk to the community. And they did that in order to protect the spread, stop the spread of COVID, and it was a very difficult situation within the individual prisons. But some violent criminals that were at the end or near the end, I guess, of their prison terms were released and unfortunately returned to their previous habits. Jordan?
Well, I think they returned to a communities that had no civil society structure to help them get back on their feet. I mean, these were boarded up towns and cities. I mean, so Dan, when we've seen these mercy releases, and I think that you're right for the most part, that most of the people who were involved in any kind of crime, and especially violent crimes, had to basically be on they were going to be released anyways the next few months, and they were causing more problems by being there than good, age, whatever. But we know most go back to crime. That's true with rescission rate. Yeah. So, I mean, but then Washington, D.C., again, the cities are boarded up. Civil society is not the same. You know, and we were getting to a point where things started to open again, but it kind of is all stalled out.
Well, I tell you a couple of things, Jordan. First of all, I mean, this is why we've tried so hard to focus on things like economic opportunity and education opportunity, because you do need to provide incentives and provide ways for people who are not born into advantaged situations to find opportunity. And Jordan, that's how you address the solution. But look, I want to go back to something you said just a segment or two ago. No matter how many of these reforms that you accomplish, you're still going to have violence, whether it's from people that are returning from time or whether or not it's a first-time offense is really sort of beside the point, Jordan. You are going to have violence on the streets in some instances. The question is, are you going to have someone that can respond to that? And look, one of the stated goals from Mayor de Blasio's initiative was shrinking the NYPD's headcount. Jordan, that means there will be less people to respond when there's violence on the streets. There's no excuse for that.
That is so backwards as a policy matter, ridiculous as a policy matter. Now, the New York Times reported this. This goes to what the last caller said. Joseph Edward Williams shot and killed a man in Tampa, Florida, March 20th. This was according to authorities. This is from the New York Times. That was one day after he was among more than 160 inmates released from the Hillsborough County Jail. So it does happen. Now, that should not happen. And most of the people being released are nonviolent offenders. And that I do understand. But we've got to be careful here. You're going to have, if you have this kind of civil unrest, is a recipe for disaster. It is. Civil unrest on this level is a recipe for disaster. And it's very hard for the country to get back on its feet when you've got a pandemic and civil unrest going on at the same time. So it's not just a question of law and orders. You got to have law and order. You have to have plans and process. You have to have economic stimulus. You have to have a plan for training law enforcement. You have to have a justice system that can actually operate. This is not easy. It's complicated, but there's no options here. This is how you have to run a civil society. So we've got to get the civil society restored to build the confidence level up for our people. And look, this pandemic has changed a lot of things. And, you know, in ways we probably haven't imagined.
Well, Americans are risk takers. By nature, we are risk takers. So you have to get people to where it's that the risk assessment you do quickly in your head about all the decisions you make throughout your day, where you're back to where you were. And that's different depending on your risk assessment is different where you live, job you had. Health. I mean, listen, if you're a police officer, it's a different risk assessment every single day. If you're in the military, it's a different risk assessment every day. But also, it's gotten past that point now where everybody's having to make risk assessments, and your businesses that you work for are making risk assessments about how they should open an office, or is it even worth turning the lights back on if we're just going to be forced next week by the mayor to turn the lights back off? They're having to make all those decisions constantly. Let's go to Sandra and Virginia on line one. Sandra, welcome to JSecu Live.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all you do. We're originally from New York. We still have family there and also in upstate, and part of the overall violence in the whole state has gone up in part to bail reform, which was signed into law on January 1st of this year, and it returns criminals almost immediately to the street, regardless almost of what they've done, because we've had friends of ours, family, tell us that child molesters they just get booked and released.
So here's what happens. Some social engineering plans, I don't want to cut you off, I'll let you finish, Sandra. Some social engineering plans don't work, and when they don't work, change the plan, but go ahead.
But the police in New York were already against de Blasio because he was just all for it. He was all in the tent for it.
Yeah, he's been tense.
And not only that, under this supposed bail reform, it gives access the criminal and their lawyer to not only the crime scene, but the names, phone numbers, and addresses of the victims.
I mean, think about that. That's failed policy. So one of the things we're doing, Than's doing this with his teams, we're doing that with our legal team, Than's doing it with our government affairs team, and we're doing this with our policy people. And that's why your support of the ACLJ is so important, because obviously we're coming to you in a broadcast. I mean, we do a TV broadcast and radio broadcast every single day. And we're, like I said, we're not doing less, we're doing more. Logan's launched a program that he hosts called Logan Seculo Reprogrammed. We have video shorts that Jordan's doing. We have video clips that our editing team and production teams take these broadcasting out. We're hitting on multi-social media platforms. We're putting policies forward. Than, even while Washington is pretty much shut down and you've got minimal staff on campus, we are still working on issues.
Yeah, more important than ever, Jay. And I mean, look, there's this wrong-headed insistence from the left right now that this is an issue of law and order versus demonstrating for justice. And Jay, we are demonstrating that is exactly the opposite. It's actually strong law and order that ensures the space and the safety so people can demonstrate for justice. And two of the things that you've got to do that we're really focusing in right now, if people have confidence in their law enforcement, which you could get through some of the reforms like we're in the Justice Act, if they have confidence that they're going to have opportunity and education and economic opportunity, then Jay, some of these things start to improve. So you're right. This is the moment more than ever that ideas that have merit have to rise to the top. We're putting them out. Now it's up to the American people to work with us to make sure that their elected officials actually focus on that rather than pandering to these radical ideas, Jay.
Yeah, they are radical ideas, but this is, look, we got to be able to respond to it, and that's what we're doing here at the American Center for Law and Justice in the United States and around the world, but a lot of focus right now, as you can imagine, right here in our homeland, in the United States of America. We talked about Supreme Court yesterday. We talked about policies today. We're going to be addressing these issues. We're in a matching challenge campaign for July. Now, I know, look, I'm only asking those that can afford to do it. If you cannot afford it, don't worry about it. Don't even think about it. But if you can afford to support the work of the ACLJ, this is a really great time to do it. If you have the resources, let me underscore, if you've got the resources, we would encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ.
You can do that at aclj.org. It's how we bring in this broadcast every single day. It's how we do all of this, whether it is the policy work, whether it's the legal work, the courts, even if they're not, the building's not open, the courts have continued to operate. So all this work, all these policies, all these issues, we've had to engage throughout this, and we can do it because of your support for the ACLJ, and you can double the impact of your support the entire month of July. Those who are able to donate online at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.